on WHDD, Jill and I became aware of something that's been going on. David Tarachuk, who does the media beat with us, also brought this to our attention. And we have with us right now Taylor Krause, who's on the phone with us. Taylor is going to talk to us a little bit about Voices of Rwanda, which, well, for folks out there, first of all, Taylor, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Marshall. I'm excited to share our work.
Let's talk a little bit about Voices of Rwanda. For people that are listening right now and are not aware, let's talk a little bit about what that is.
Well, I'm the executive director of Voices of Rwanda, which is an oral history archive which films video testimonies of genocide survivors in Rwanda, the genocide against the Tutsi that was committed in 1994.
Now, most of the mainstream media, I mean, it was covered for just a few moments here, but not really covered the way it was covered on the rest of the world, like on the BBC or other networks. Let's talk a little bit about what happened and the amazing stories that are coming out of this.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible when we think about 1994, which was just 16 years ago, that, you know, over 500,000 to 1 million people were massacred in just about 100 days. What happened was, after many decades of some fighting in Rwanda, and I can get into the history a little bit later if we want to talk about how this came about, but what ended up happening was the Hutu majority in Rwanda turned on the Tutsi minority, and within 3 months' time, the Tutsi population was decimated. And, you know, what ended up happening after 1994 was the RPF, the Tutsi rebel group that was at war with the regime in power starting from 1990 onwards, eventually stopped the genocide, took over the country, and began a campaign to really rebuild the nation. And for the last 16 years has done so under the leadership of President Kagame, who is incidentally up for election right now. The presidential elections are happening right now as we speak in Rwanda. And what's coming out of these narratives, basically, you know, these genocide survivors have lived in an atmosphere where they're living side by side with the killers of their families. So they didn't have the luxury of fleeing Rwanda, most of them, or living in neighboring countries or living in safe havens. And so they're living next to people who killed their families, and they're incredibly alone. And most of those individuals do not have much support because their whole support network, their whole families and friends were massacred. So they're incredibly alone. And for the first time several years ago, when Voices of Rwanda, when we created Voices of Rwanda, we decided that listening to those survivors was something critically important, not just for them, but also for the rest of the world. So we began this campaign to film video testimonies. And yes, these testimonies are fascinating, not just testimonies of what happened in 1994, but really broad life stories that encompass Rwandan history and culture and proverbs pre-genocide all the way up until the present day. So these testimonies are really profound, special stories. And, you know, they also play an important role, we feel, in both genocide prevention and education, as well as what we hope making a long-term contribution to intellectual contributions to understanding how genocide happens and under what contexts, as well as a lot of other resources that these could serve for in various different disciplines.
What I find interesting reading some of the information that you sent me, first of all, when we talk about these testimonies, folks, these aren't just testimonies. Some of these testimonies are 10 hours long, and they really go on people's histories of lives. But I think also what's interesting to me is that, yes, you focus on the survivors, but you also do focus on Rwandan history and mm-hmm. tradition. I think you can hear a survivor's story and not really get the impact of it unless you understand the history of how it developed.
That's absolutely right. In order to understand what happened in the Rwandan genocide, you really have to contextualize that in broader Rwandan history. The Rwandan genocide, like all genocides, didn't happen overnight. There was a long history that led up to that genocide. And as well, in these individual lives, you know, the history that led up to that was not all horrible and horrific. It was actually, there's some amazing oral history that comes out of this. And over the next 20 years, as we continue this really long-term, longitudinal process, we will have an archive that has amazing stories that have never before been recorded. And, you know, we interviewed a man who was talking about Rwanda before money. And also, you know, stories like that that you just wouldn't hear unless you sat down and listened to populist oral history. And you mentioned that these testimonies are sometimes 10 hours long. And I also, one of the reasons that they're sometimes very lengthy like that is because we don't stop anybody once they start talking. We're not there to say, okay, your time has been met and, you know, your time is up. We're there to say we're ready to listen and we'll listen as long as you want to share with us, whatever you want to share with us. And so when people are talking about their lives, they also talk about memories they had of relatives that they eventually lost in 1994. And one can simply hear stories about 1994 about loss and not actually understand that loss until you meet those people. And, you know, I can talk about every single testimony, and each testimony when you meet, you know, in one testimony, when you meet Antoinette's father, the way she related to her father as a child, and then later on you discover that her father, whom she loved the most in her family, was killed, you understand a little bit more what she's feeling and a little bit more about her loss than you would if you simply just heard a story of horror about her experiences during those 3 months in Rwanda. So I think also it's really pertinent in order to understand the experience of survivors as much as we can as outsiders is to listen to what these family relationships meant to them even before it happened.
What I find, we're speaking with Taylor Cross from Voices of Rwanda. What I find interesting is you mentioned in your notes that you're doing this in terms of longitudinal recording. And for folks, what that is when they interview people, it doesn't end there. 5 years, 10 years, 15 years later, you're going to go back and get more of the oral history. And what intrigues me about this is I've seen this done in one other circumstance that I'm aware of, and it was following several people from India and third world nations, and how they grew up from being 5 years old, 10 years old, 15 years old. And it's truly a stunning feature that even after now 15 years is going to go on for the next 15, 20 years, because it really gives not only a timeline, but you can actually see the evolution of not only that person, but that person in relationship to other people in other countries and other continents. And it really gives you a development of the world.
I think also what's really special when you have a chance to go back and interview people, you hear how maybe these narratives change over time. And so, yes, you're hearing how things are developing around that individual. So in Rwanda, as the political climate changes, as more and more people hear about Rwanda, the way people present their narratives changes. And there are examples of longitudinal studies in film. I mean, we can look to Michael Apted's, you know, The Up series, where he followed individuals over the course of their lifetime. And as you say, you have a broader picture of what's happening around them. But on a broad scale, this hasn't been done in terms of video testimony and oral history, especially in a situation like after a genocide. And there have been a few cases of some Holocaust testimonies that have been recorded, for example, at the Fortunoff Video Archives for Holocaust Testimonies at Yale, which was one of the most inspiring archives in my life, which was one of the inspiring, kind of played an inspiring role in actually the creation of Voices of Rwanda when I was a student there. But you have an example where one of the professors, Professor Dr. Dory Laug, went back and interviewed individuals whom he had interviewed 25 years earlier. And this was, you know, just a small sampling of people, but for the most part, in terms of the field of oral history, we don't have accounts like this. And so I think that's also going to be a contribution of what we can do by having this long-term approach. For example, I mentioned the woman who talked about her relationship with her father. She also had a twin sister, and her twin sister was killed. And years later, about a year ago after, well, 2 years after her testimony, about a year ago, she had a baby. And she said that in some ways, having this baby was like, you know, a little bit of a replacement for her twin sister. And I think that if we were to interview her again, 5 years later, 10 years later, the way she reframes her testimony will be slightly different, because her first pass, her first time she ever spoke, was giving a testimony with Voices of Rwanda. And that first time, the testimony was, every single part of it was imbibed with a deep, deep sorrow. And I don't think that that will go away, but I do think ever since her child, every time I speak with her, her complete mood is different. And so I think the way she frames her whole narrative will change, and that will be important. And with people who are studying oral history and psychologists who are studying the way memory works and myriads of things that even we haven't thought about the importance of. And so I hope to make contributions even to the field of oral history with this work.
All right, Taylor. Now I want to move on, because you're launching something that's really very, very interesting, and that's a Voices of Rwanda Fellowship. Which is a 15-month program, and it's fully funded, which I want to get to. That'll be the next part. I'll speak to you in just a few minutes. But you actually take fellows to Rwanda. You're going to film for 3 months. They'll film for 9 months, and then they get to train the next fellows that come in their last 3 months. Has this been hard to set up? And is it well set up now, where you actually have applicants and it's underway?
Yeah, well, up to this point, for the last 3.5 years, our push has really been to figure out, how do we, as an outside organization, or as an organization that was founded outside of Rwanda with foreigners, effectively create an organization that is uniquely Rwandan and knows how to do this process from A to Z, not as outsiders, but together with the survivor community. And I can speak to ways that we've done that, you know, interesting ways in terms of training a staff to learn how to type, and you know, our staff is predominantly of survivors. And to this point, we have been a very small operation, one office in Kigali, and we want to expand, you know, the offices to every single province in the country, so that we'll have 5 offices. And in order to do that, we realized that to have an effective and maintain the quality of each testimony, we need to have a very serious training program that isn't just a 3-day training program, but it is a 3-month-long training program. And we have brought in individuals and done this training, and individuals have filmed over the course of a year. And we've discovered that a 15-month fellowship is really, you know, it's less than a 2-year Peace Corps, you know, Peace Corps fellowship, but it's more than a year-long fellowship. Because people really do need to have time in Rwanda to understand a little bit more about what it's like to live in Rwanda before they even begin to entertain the idea of facilitating a testimony. And for those 3 months, we do train people in Kinyarwanda, and presumably most of these applicants that we have been receiving already have a little bit of knowledge of French, which is very helpful as well. And once they come to Rwanda, they have 3 months, and we allow them to, you know, travel around the country and get their feet wet a little bit before they actually begin in earnest on their own. And yes, this is a new sort of initiative, because we've never before called it a fellowship, because it in the past has been with volunteers who have given their time. And right now we have several different organizations and foundations that have said they want to make sure that this process happens. And so they are endowing this fellowship. Right now, we do have a few applicants for this coming year, but we are looking for the right people who are willing to do work that is tireless. You know, these days are not easy days, and sometimes it's very difficult to be in the process of, you know, 10-hour testimony and to not understand every word that's being spoken. You know, only small parts of the testimony are actually translated during the process. And at the end of the day, I mean, a day that begins at 5 a.m. might end at midnight after processing all of the material. And, you know, of course, the next day is a rest day where people go and visit in houses, because we also do house visits and follow up follow-up demographic interviews. But those are really long, hard days. So it takes a really specific and special kind of person that wants to do this, not for, you know, ulterior motives, but just for the sake of going in and listening. And I can tell you that all of the individuals who have come to Rwanda who have participated in this process of listening to testimonies, they are forever changed. Inevitably, listening to these stories changes you in ways that are sometimes very difficult to deal with. So it's a specific kind of individual that we're looking for, and we hope that the right people, as they have in the past, come to us for this fellowship.
All right. Now, Voices of Rwanda is a 501c3. You obviously, even though you're funded, you have fellowships. Do you look for volunteers? Do you look for other people to step forward and help you with fundraising? And if so, how can people contact you or Voices of Rwanda?
Absolutely. And one of the reasons also that we have not expanded to, you know, the five offices that we dream of having in Rwanda across the whole country is because of funds. We rely on funds of, you know, the populace. And so we set up, you know, house presentations and where people come together with their friends and colleagues to actually watch testimonies and engage in conversations about what it means to have genocide happen, you know, while we are in this modern age right now, what we're living through and what our contribution needs to do. So house parties and presentations at universities, and all of these are ways that we are raising funds. And we do hope that people who want to set up presentations in schools and have their communities come together to support this filming process will contact us through our website at info@voicesofrwanda.org. That's the email address, but the website is www.voicesofrwanda.org. And that they will express, you know, interest in this because I think ultimately it's not just Rwandans that this is important for. It's really important for us to understand the problems of civilization and what we can do to contribute to helping stop genocide. So we do just rely on people coming to us and helping us in this process of fundraising. Absolutely.
Well, Taylor, the old saying is if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. And the only way you can learn from history is to know about it.
I think that's right. I think knowing about this history not only can help us steer a different path and figure out what role we play as individuals. I mean, one of the reasons that I'm in Rwanda doing this work is because I grew up learning about the Holocaust and realized that I am obligated to contribute in some way. And what that history meant to me, I'm trying to make relevant in my life today. And so I think that by learning about this history, we do try to steer a different course for us. And that is the promise and the hope of an archive as well. We are hoping for a better future for ourselves.
All right, Taylor. Well, I'd like to for you to keep us up to date on this. Maybe every couple of months we can get together and find out how's it going. Now, when's the next time you go back over to Rwanda?
I go back to Rwanda in just a few months. I'm in the United States so that I can be sharing our work, and I'll be back there in just a few months. And I spend a little over half my time there now. Over the last few years, you know, I've been living there. We have a home in Kigali, Please do reach out to us if you're visiting Rwanda or want to come visit Rwanda or want to get involved in this work. We'd love to share it with you, and we need your help.
Okay, Taylor, and that is voicesofrwanda.org, voicesofrwanda.org, if you want more information. Taylor, really, thank you for taking a few minutes out today and joining us.
Marshall, I really appreciate it. Thank you for taking time out. And, you know, thanks so much for your interest in this. It's such a faraway little country, but I think it has really wide implications. And we need to listen to the survivors there.
All right. Thank you, Taylor.